Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell. Thank you for joining us on the Conscious Vibe. DJ?
How are you, man?
Doing great, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Likewise. No more Zoom for you and I.
No, we're live and in person, man. Contiguous.
And we have one of my favorite people on us on the line today. I shouldn't say on the line. On camera today with us. Asima Navlaki, how are you today? Good to see you.
I'm good, Charles. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Asima is CEO of BES, formerly known as Building Excellence Schools. Organization that's been around for, almost 30 years, right?
Almost 25 years. Yes. Kind of depends on who you ask, but since 2003.
30, right? Yeah. It's getting closer to 30. But happy to have you on. I want to talk about all the great work that BES does, obviously. But first and foremost, want to hear about you and your story, your personal story in terms of your upbringing and your family life, all those things. And we'll get to the great work that BES does.
Sure. That sounds great. Do you have specific questions or you just want me to start from like the day I was born?
Well, I would like you to talk about the day you were born.
Okay. It's very nice to be here. I guess I'll tell you a little bit about myself. So my name's Asima. I was born and raised in India and was born in Bombay, was raised in Bangalore. So I consider myself a South Indian more than North Indian. For those of you who are listening who are Indian, you probably understand, read between the lines, what that means. I spent basically my full schooling career back in Bangalore City, which is in South India, and really was brought up by parents and grandparents specifically who were consistently and continuously telling me two things. One is that I needed to study and be really good at studying because education is what would set me up to face the world. And two, that I could then do anything that I wanted to and be whoever I wanted to be. So I grew up very fortunately with parents and grandparents who set a really high bar in terms of what they expected from me, but also just were constant cheerleaders for who they thought I could be. And so having sort of adults who believed in me and also pushed me out of the nest really quickly. I went to college in the UK at 18. I remember my dad flew there with me and dropped me off at Warwick University, which is a campus university, which means it's in the middle of nowhere, and then just left. And I remember just crying in my dorm room thinking like, where am I? What's happened? I need to go back home. But he really was of the mindset that I needed to get out of my little bubble and meet people who were from different countries and cultures and backgrounds and learn something more than I could have learned just staying at home. And so I went to college in the UK, studied economics, politics, and international studies, made some lifelong friends, went back home and taught at the theater and communication school that I was a student at before I left. So we worked with five-year-olds all the way up to 25-year-olds on theater and speech and public speaking and all of those wonderful things that sort of sets you up and complements, I think, at least what we were getting from schooling back in Bangalore. And then came to the US for grad school for arts journalism, met my husband in that small program of 15 of us in the class. And I think the rest is a little bit of history. I thought I would go back home, but we ended up getting married. I found my first job here in higher ed, in ed tech, working at a startup that created a learning management system for higher ed institutions, and just realized that I wasn't really excited about the work that I was doing. And even though I was working in the communications space, I was a communications manager there, if I wasn't writing or talking about something that really meant something to me, I wasn't being fulfilled. And when I really thought about what that is, I kept going back to what was instilled in me since I was a kid, which is just education and seeing sort of the divergent pathways that myself and even, you know, folks I sat next to in school took because of that difference of having adults who believed in you and really held that high bar. So I was looking for something that was more focused on K-12, that was built on the belief that all children can and should have the opportunity to succeed and choose a life of live a life of their choosing. And that's when I found BES and started there as a communications manager many decades ago, it feels like, but only back in 2014. And I've been there ever since and sort of grown up in the organization and took on the CEO role, I think it's about 3.5 years ago now. So yes, I don't know if that was too much or too little, but that's one version of a story.
Oh, great. And before we talk more about BES, I want to go back. How many siblings do you have? Or do you have siblings?
I have one brother. He's 2.5 years younger than me. And he is currently living back home in Bangalore City with his wife and in the same city as my parents to live in.
And so what's life like in Bangalore as you compare it to your life in Boston right now?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think there's things that are wonderful about it. It's just different. So life in Bangalore is, a lot of my family and friends are there. So it's very social. You know, there's consistently people to meet. This is a good example. When the doorbell rings in Bangalore, it's just, of course, that's someone else coming in to see you. There's no, you know, eyebrows raised or questions asked. If I'm at my house in Boston and the doorbell rings, everyone just freezes and looks at each other like, were you expecting something? Like, we're all here. Like, what is happening? Which I think is like the if you had to distill the difference between life in Bangalore and life in Boston, for me, that's what it is. So there's like friends and family and neighbors consistently in and out of the house. Whereas here, it's not. There's a lot of help. In India, you know, you have cooks and who make delicious food. And I'm the all-in-one here in Boston for myself and my husband and our daughter. So, yeah, but there's also a lot of traffic. And it's really hard to get from one place to another. And time has a different meaning. You know, if someone's like, yep, I'll see you in 30 minutes. Probably in the next 3 hours or so, or maybe a couple of days is when you have that actually happen, which is fortunately, I don't think the case in Boston.
You know, I've got good friends from India that I've spent time with in their homes with their families, and the thing I've noticed is one, there's this extended family that's, you know, a big part of life. The other is I've never quite made it to dinner. And
yeah,
I've never, you know, because, you know, it's 11:30. I'm tired. I think I'm going to go home and go to bed. I mean, it's an evening that just never ends. Right. And the time is just so, you know, I was just in such awe of the way the evening went in terms of just conversation, really just spending time and enjoying one another. And, you know, there'd be these little sort of like snacks that would come out here and there. And that's obviously working our way towards the ultimate, you know, dinner at some point later on in the evening, but always a fascinating experience. And you certainly see the value around family, the value around spending that kind of time together. And I see it as something truly special that we don't do enough of here, in my opinion.
Yeah, great.
So as CEO, obviously there are a number of challenges, especially just, you know, political headwinds, et cetera. What are some of the biggest challenges you face in your role today as CEO of BES?
So many. We aren't even going to like start with what's going well. We're just going to get into the challenges. I think one of the big challenges for BES right now is that, and Charles knows this, you know, 3 years ago, we put a stake in the ground about really being an anti-racist organization or aspiring to be an anti-racist organization. And what I realized, I think, too late into my tenure as a CEO is that the work that I had taken on and the work that we were in was true turnaround work. If we were looking at actually living into the values that we wanted to aspire to. And we wanted to bring that into our actions and our processes and our systems. And I think that has been really challenging because that has meant turnover. That has meant difficult conversations. That has meant, you know, doubling down and not backing off when things get hard. And all of this is whilst we're continuing to do our work of just sort of running our programming. So I think the people piece of it and the sort of bringing everyone back around to the why of the work and the why it is important right now to continue to double down on the work, it's just draining. And I think personally as a CEO, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, with sort of the world that we're living in, the news that's coming out every single day, right? It's just having to be sort of a vessel for everyone else's struggles also, right? And so not having the time or space really to process things because you need to show up to help your people and your team process has been challenging. There's a lot more. I think those are the top two.
Yeah, well, I've got another one that I want to throw at you in terms of a question that I think is really relevant to you and your role. But first, I want to back up for our audience. Would you just share what BES's primary role is as an organization?
Yes. So BES is a national nonprofit organization. We are a true leadership development organization that seeks to support leaders, identify and support leaders to build truly excellent and equitable schools across the country, help them excel in the work that they're doing in these schools, and then help them sustain that work over time. So we have a few ways in which we do that. The main way in which we do that is we run a fellowship through which we identify high capacity leaders who are committed to equity and excellence and support them with the time, resources, tools, skills, coaching that they need to develop a vision for a school and then execute on it. And then we have a whole host of leadership development programs that are meant to support leaders who are in existing schools to sort of level up their leadership towards creating more impact and success for kids.
Thank you for that. And Julia Morrison, who is CEO and founder of Vista College Prep here in Phoenix, season one guest, is also a BES alum. And my question for you, coming on the heels of, and I say for this space, an iconic CEO, founder, Linda Brown, who has a very distinct personality. I have a lot of reverence for Linda, given she really extended herself to me very early on when Julia was established in Vista and wanted me to be her board chair. And she and I connected literally in the Phoenix airport for about an hour. She was on a layover. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget that time with her. And then some years later reached out and said, I want you to be on my board. So much about her personality exuded a lot about the organization. I mean, Linda was building excellent schools in a lot of respects. How have you been able to come into your own, bringing your personality, which is very different, your style of leadership, which is very different, and be effective in this role, and also to sort of leave behind some of the things of the past, obviously, as we move towards being an anti-racist organization? Talk about how you've been able to do that and to do it successfully and what your biggest challenges in that respect are.
Great question. First of all, Linda Brown was just a force. And I've been at BES since 2014 and learned so much from her. You know, I was very fortunate to be able to slowly get closer and closer to her in the work, even in the communications role. Like, she was really hands-on, I would say, in sort of all of the different aspects of BES's work. And so everyone, no matter what their level was in the organization, felt really close to Linda as the CEO, because she wanted to have her hands in everything. And I think one of the things, I guess the answer to the how have I been able to do it differently is just by building a really strong team
that is like taking on so much of that work, and that I can just like stand behind and be the behind the scenes person, and where I need to be the face of the organization. But really, I credit the leadership team that we have built, and the teams under those leaders who are leading our strategy work, who are leading our communications work, and who are leading our programmatic work. So Jasmine Fryer, who's our chief strategy officer, has really leads our talent and our development teams. Nicole Schaefer-Thomas, who's our chief of staff, is really running all things internal operations. And then Gina Musumeci joined us last year as our chief program officer, who's really driving sort of the programs team. And like under that, for each of our programs, we really have towards expanding our supports for leaders in all public schools and really thinking about how do we move away from that singular no excuses model that building excellent schools was about, to really focusing on being responsive to community, to supporting our leaders to found schools that are rooted in equity, and to really understand that a school in New York can and must and will look very different from a school in Athens, Georgia, and the supports that that leader needs and what that community might need from the school is very different. And so to that end, really building a team of coaches and programmatic leaders who bring a variety of experience, I think has taken us a long way to be able to show up in the way that we need to show up for our leaders. What has been challenging, I think, is just the relationships and the access. And I think that's not just for me. I think currently in the education sector, we are seeing a lot of transition from, the sort of pioneers in the work who are now stepping back or stepping away, and a lot of leaders who are coming in, who a vast majority of them are leaders of color coming in on the heels of leaders who identify as white. And not having the same access to relationships or funders or resources. And for a new CEO coming in on the heels of, a force who has brought in so much for the organization through those through that access and through those relationships, I think that has been challenging to sort of replicate and to get the sort of flywheel turning on. And it has required, I think, a lot of energy and tapping into a lot of friends and finding my own networks and my own people and folks that want to support the vision that I now want to lead at BES. And I think that was really hard for the first 3 years. And I think just now, I would say probably in the last year or so, and again, crediting sort of the team that we've built and the work that has gone into the foundation, I think that is starting to stick, and we're starting to see a lot more confidence in the work that we are doing versus just what we are saying we want to do, because we have results to show for it, and we have leaders to show for it, and we have diverse school models to show for it that we didn't have before.
So that was going to be one of my questions. When you, obviously, you are placing and developing leaders across the country in really critical roles. And one of the questions I had is, what seems to be that common thread associated with your most successful and high-performing leaders? Is it a specific competency? Is it the ability to garner these resources? What are you finding there?
I think it's a few different things. I think one is just the ability to sort of lead and motivate. Mm-hmm. When leaders come to BES, all they have is an idea. And even when they're building their school, even once they've submitted their charter application, that's all it is. It's an idea and a vision for a school. And based on that, they need to get board members who are committed to coming on board early on, just believing in that leader. They need to convince families to enroll in a school that doesn't exist. It doesn't have a building. You can't bring a family to a building and say, like, here's what you're getting. They really are just investing in the vision of that leader. And so I think the ability to sort of lead and motivate and bring people along and rally folks around a vision is really important. Listening is extremely important. I think both in the ability to listen to community and be willing to tweak things in your model and your vision when you hear things that maybe is different from what you thought you wanted to create. And then also listening during your time in the fellowship as a leader, being able to take feedback, being able to know what you don't know and ask the questions and be humble enough to take the feedback to implement it. And then third, this is a hard one because how do you even measure this? But I think resilience, the landscape is so challenging, even in states where it feels like this is probably an easier state to get a school approved, or things are super political. There are a variety of reasons why leaders may not get authorized on the timeline that they had thought they would, and or there's a facilities challenge. We're still in the midst of a pandemic, and that has really disrupted the timelines and goals for leaders, both who are starting schools and who are continuing to run schools. And a big piece there is, you know, there, for example, this past year, there was an authorization timeline that was pushed out in Georgia due to COVID. And so they just pushed it out by a year. And all of our leaders now had to basically figure out how do they pay their bills for that year. And as you can imagine, that disproportionately every single time affects leaders of color more than it affects our white leaders. So it's really thinking about how do we keep leaders in the game and keep them committed to continuing on that trajectory to start a school. So I guess the ability to lead and motivate others, and then the ability to keep yourself motivated to stay in the work is super important. And I think the underlying to all of it is just that belief that all children can and will succeed and have unlimited potential. Because if that belief doesn't exist, then you should not be in this work.
You know, it's so funny. As I listen to you, you know, I can't get Julia out of my head because she exudes all those things and more. And it is a challenge, and it is it's difficult. It's a difficult time right now trying to educate kids and have that belief. And you know, I watch her all the time. Never giving in to the forces that would lead you to believe that, you know, these things, you know, are not necessarily possible. And so I think that the work that BES does is so critical. I'm thankful to be a part of it. You know, I'm thankful to be a part of the work that we do at Vista College Prep. And obviously there's a lot more work that we all need to do, but I think with committed people like yourself, you know, like Julia, and all the many, many other fellows and alums that are focused on doing this work and doing it well, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah, agreed. And we cannot be more thrilled. I tell you this all the time, Charles, that you serve on BES's board. I think for leaders such as myself, who are like new leaders too, it is critically important to have people in your life who will be champions and cheerleaders and also like critical friends of your work. And Charles is all of those things and more. And I'm sure you are the same to Julia as well. So I will not speak on behalf of her, but I have seen the two of you interact. So I will base my comment on that one time.
She's an inspiration to me in so many ways. And I'm just grateful to be able to do the work with her alongside her. It's fun.
Yeah, I don't think I could do the work that our founders and leaders do. And I say that to them all the time. I say, like, I have the easier job, right? I can sit behind here and, like, try to get the access to resources and, you know, build a team of coaches that can support you. But you are all on the front lines. And especially for our leaders this year, talk about leadership being lonely and completely unmanageable at times and having to sort of be there to be a vessel for your teams. I think our school leaders have really seen that firsthand and continue to see that this year, last year, and I hope we don't know for how many years to come, but it's been really, really tough.
So we've talked a little bit about the challenges and, you know, some of the potential issues moving forward. What do you get most excited about thinking about the future for BES?
You know, we recently had a fellow showcase. We had one with the board, I think, a few months ago. And then we recently invited a few of our funders to listen to our fellows and learn a little bit more about the models that they're proposing. And it was just so inspiring to be able to see fellows talk about the visual and performing arts school that they're proposing in Texas, or the Montessori school that they're proposing in Atlanta, or the community co-design work that folks are doing by engaging communities and bringing their voices into the design aspect of the school. And that diversity of models is what we were sort of dreaming about and envisioning, and something that I hoped we could see at BES when I took on as CEO.
That did not exist 10 years ago.
It did not exist. It did not exist 5 years ago. Right. You know, we didn't. And it is just so wonderful to see all of that sort of starting to come to fruition, because the work that we do is wonderful, but it is a long game. You know, when you bring fellows in, they have the idea, and 3 years later, if everything goes well, they've opened doors to a school. And so I think seeing that now, almost 4 years into this work, has been really, really fulfilling. And then the other piece that is just joyous every single day is when we get to visit schools and we actually get to walk in the doors and see the students learning, and see those things that, you know, were one pager that fellows created in the office in at BES, or sent around initially the first version of their logo, to sort of see that on little kids' shirts as they walk into a building. I don't think there's a feeling that can challenge that, you know. That's been great. And the last thing I'll say is, we really built an intentional commitment to diversifying not just the models, but also specifically bringing in leaders of color to this work, because we know sort of the gaps in opportunity and access for leaders of color. And over the past 2 years, our fellowship cohorts have been over 80% leaders of color. And we're hopeful that this cohort will continue in that lane. And so that's just been great. I think at the end of the day, the work that we do and the why for, you know, why we do our work keeps me in it, even though the day to day can be really, really challenging.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. You know, again, you know, just resonating with everything you shared, you know, some of the most proudest moments I have is when I get to share Vista with friends of mine. I mean, DJ being a prime example of having the opportunity to meet Julia, spend time at the school, and then, you know, they turn around and say, what can I do to help? Yeah. Can I be involved? And, you know, DJ was really instrumental in helping us get started a golf program and a soccer program through his resources and his network last year. And so those are the things when you know that you introduce community to this work and they respond because they believe in what they see.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. That's so awesome. I'm glad that you were able to do that with Vista. We'll take you to a few more of our BES schools. We'll add that to the list.
Well, you know, honestly, I'm not just saying it. I would love to, and Charles knows I'm serious about that. And it doesn't have to just be here in Phoenix.
Michigan,
Portland, Oregon, wherever it might be. I have roots in a lot of different places. But, you know, to Charles's point, it's one thing to sit and talk about it, and I'm not great at that, to be honest. I need to see it and feel it, touch it. So Charles was kind enough to invite me to Vista. And he'll tell you it brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
To see kids so young, so engaged with each other, and so engaged in the success of other students.
Yeah.
And focused on group success and teamwork. It was actually mind blowing. And I've been in education for a long time. I finished my doctorate in 2018, and we didn't practice that in that environment. It becomes an individual game, right? If you get it, you don't. Hey, if I like you, I'll help you, or whatever it is. But to see that instilled at such a young age was mind blowing. So any way I could help or could have helped was a no brainer. I have a passion for golf. I think sports extremely important. So just helping to be a part with Charles and another gentleman, Doug, to help bring that to the school was a no brainer for me. So I would love to connect with you later and talk about what that could look like elsewhere.
Yeah. And you know, that reminds me, and I maybe have told you this story, Charles, like when I moved here, you know, in India, the perception of public school in the US is really what you see sort of on after school specials, if you're allowed to watch those. So I remember telling my then, I guess, boyfriend, now husband, like, if we ever have kids, we're going to move back to India because I'm not sending my kids to school in the US. Like, this is what schooling here looks like. They don't do anything. No one studies. Like, it's we're going back where there's actual focus on, you know, learning. And I remember going to a BES school in Tennessee during my first year as a communications manager at BES. And I needed to get on the road and see some of our work, right, to be able to talk about what we do. And so vividly remember calling up Josh from there and saying, I have good news. We don't have to move. There are schools that I would be willing to send our kids to. And so we're okay. And I will never forget that. And I tell that story all the time. And I think that that's sort of even more true now as we see sort of the diversity of models coming up. But I can imagine, like, I totally empathize with what you might have felt walking into Vista for that first time.
Incredible. Yeah, it was highly impressive. It was incredible. You know, and I'll be really honest with you. I was associated with a charter school back in New York City. And also Inspired. It was an all-boys school, but Inspired. But when you say the word charter school, high performing isn't necessarily the first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And I loved experiencing something that showed me differently.
Yeah.
And knowing that when we talk about charter schools, they're actually necessary. Mm-hmm. They're necessary, especially in, you know, certain environments. So I'm glad I got a chance to experience it, and congratulations to you both for being involved in leading this charge.
Yeah, there's a lot more work to do. And so we have a long way to go, and we have a lot of strong leaders who are, thankfully, even in this current environment, right, where everyone's exiting the ed space, it feels like, really actually committed and taking that as a call to action. To actually get into the work of engaging with communities and reimagining what education can look like for kids. So really grateful to be part of that work.
So as we sort of come to a close, is there anything you would like to leave us with or ask us? Something maybe we missed and you wish we had highlighted?
I would love to ask. I mean, I have a journalism background, so I kind of wish like I could interview the two of you now. But DJ, I don't know a lot about you, and you told me a little bit about how you got interested in education. How did you get interested in podcasting? And like, what's your goal with this podcast for the two of you? Like, how does that fit into all the work that you all are doing? And what is your goal for it to be? Like, what would you hope to accomplish through this?
I answered that question last time, so you get the answer.
I think at some point in life, you feel like if you aren't adding value, you don't have a purpose. Mm. And I hit that point a couple of years ago, and it was probably in concert with leaving corporate America, pursuing a doctorate, teaching college, and doing things that felt like it wasn't about making the money or building a career anymore. It was about truly being deliberate around adding value. And I think the podcast, for me, I won't speak for Charles, though I believe it's the case as well, is to try and add some value and some sensibility to a lot of what's happening in society today. Yep. And if we can get some ears and some eyes pointed in the direction of, you know, conscious, deliberate, intellectual conversations and kind of out of the quips and the narratives and emotion-based behavior, mm-hmm. then, you know, I think the podcast is a success. I'm passionate about it. I have a lot of fun. And I think that's how it started for Charles and I. We just thought we would enjoy it. And it's blossomed into something that truly feels like it's an opportunity to add value. So I think as we, the enjoyment never subsides, but I think the adding value dimension on the spectrum continues to elevate.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think I can add anything else to that. I think DJ's really spot on. And I think part of it is that we get the opportunity to learn from people like you, hear your stories and the incredible work that you're doing. And the more we do that, talk about the flywheel, right? I mean, the more we do that, that value tends to increase and grow, and it's increased motivation and inspiration for us to want to just seek out, because what we learn is that there are so many amazing people out here doing great work who want to help, who care about people. And, you know, it changes the narrative of the things we read and see every day that you know, sometimes sends us into a little bit of a tailspin and, you know, depression at times, right? Because it's not always good news, more often than not. So thank you for being on and taking the time out to share with us. And, you know, you're increasing that value that we hope to provide.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I'll just say this too, for anyone who's listening, who's thinking about how you can add value and has ever thought about starting a school, working in a school, like just showing up for kids, I'd love to connect with you. Where I think we often get stuck in the adulting of it all, you know, and all of the adults getting together and just talking about the problems and agreeing and disagreeing. And all the while that we're doing that, there's a fourth grader who isn't learning. And there's, you know, a fifth grader who can't access his course materials. And there's a leader who has a great idea, but like doesn't have the resources to actually bring it to fruition. And I think our goal is to work towards solving all of those problems in a way that is timely and in a way that is, you know, equitable, but also creates that synonymity between schooling and high quality that DJ, you were saying doesn't really exist. So, we are committed to doing the work, but the work only happens through excellent leaders. And that's our goal, is to find those leaders and support you with what you need to do to show up for kids. So find me if you are thinking about starting a school, if you are in a school and just need support, if you are a leader of a school and are finding that your people are struggling and need support, that's what we're here for. And we'd love to connect.
Where can people find you?
BES.org. And if you go to our website and our team page, you will find me. Asiman can email me or anyone on our team. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at BES Leadership. And if any of you know Charles, you can always give him a call night or day, and he will point you in our direction as well. Right, Charles?
No question.
Well, I'm definitely going to be in touch.
Great. It was very nice to meet you, DJ. And thank you for having me. It was really nice to also reminisce about life in Bangalore for a little bit outside of talking about BES.
Thank you, Asma. Really appreciate it. Two quick things. So sorry I'm going to miss in a couple of weeks. July 11th, I'm going to be in town if you have time.
Oh, cool.
Thank you for joining us on The Conscious Vibe.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on TCVpodcast.com.